the teens, at least for part of their weekend, and do a bit of hanging around with them. Our scripture reading is not as advertised. I'm afraid that was my mistake. In case anyone thought that I was preaching from the same passage that I preached about the last time I was with you. We will be reading from Ecclesiastes, chapter 12, verses 13 and 14. And as I have it translated, you can see on the screen is the New Living Translation. This is just at the end, right at the end of the book of Ecclesiastes, and it's thought by some that maybe this isn't the Solomon that's writing it, that maybe it's a scribe that's kind of giving a bit of a summary. Either way, it doesn't matter, but it comes as a final few words. That's the whole story. Here now is my final conclusion. Fear God and obey his commands, for this is everyone's duty. God will judge us for everything we do, including every secret thing, whether good or bad. May God bless us as we consider what it is to be working for God and responding to his call of duty. With reference about hearing a call, I have an admission to share, and I guess it's a comment of thanksgiving. Privilege that I have to of being able to stand up the front, that I get to say thanks whenever I want to. But a week and a half ago, I sat in a tiny little room in the Luton and Dunstable Hospital, and having had some other tests and so on, this lady said, let me just fit this for you and we'll just check it. You see, following some other search and whatever, it was suggested to me that maybe a hearing aid on my left side would help. And I've known for years and years that I haven't really been able to hear very much out of the side, which at home sometimes is blissful. But, of course, I say that and they can't hear, but they will hear it on the recording because it's part of the sermon. So I better be careful. Maybe to extend that and give them some response. There has been a response at home of, Dad, you talk a lot quieter now. do I? Well, maybe that helps us all at home to understand. I never thought I was raising my voice. I was just talking a little louder. To them, it sounded very much different. But I thank God that suddenly... I can hear a lot more. It's a little bit distracting at times. And in fact, when the lady fitted this, every time she spoke, I was jumping out of my skin. And she looked at me at one point and she said, "You're making me nervous." I said, "You're making me jump." And she's actually adjusted it, and I'll be going back in a few weeks just to raise the level so that I can hear what you hear, but it's just, too much at the moment. But I thank God for hearing and for the other things that we all maybe take for granted. A week ago today, was the anniversary of a particular event in history. Now, I don't think that anyone was around here at this time. It happened in 1805. Just to give you a little bit of a clue, I'm just checking around the room. I don't think there's anyone quite that old. But in 1805, something happened, a historical event that I want to talk to you about and share with you. One or two questioning faces already in there, looking around. But I want to give you a little clue as to who this involved and what it might have been. So, hearing aid, and now he's standing here with a walking stick. I want you to stretch your imagination. This walking stick I have in my hand, imagine that it's maybe like a sword. I just didn't have one in the cupboard, and I don't think there was one laying around in the church for me to be able to commandeer. So imagine this walking stick is kind of like a sword, and let's see if I can get this out very carefully. Here's one I made earlier. So the saying goes, carefully unfold this, and let's pop this on my head, a little paper hat, just about big enough for my big head. And if I step back a bit and put this walking stick sword sort of like this, and right foot forward, maybe I'll step out into the middle a little bit so people can see. Any clues so far? If I put my right arm in like this. So, I see someone scrambling for their phone, so this goes up on Facebook. I'll hide behind the pulpit, the lectern. First World War, it's a bit longer ago than that. Who might this be? First Garden Gnome. Yeah, I'm clearly not trying hard enough, am I? Thank you very much. We got there in the end. Lord Nelson. I was trying to strike a pose just like at Nelson's Column there in Trafalgar Square. So, a week ago today, in 1805, what happened? The Battle of Trafalgar, there. I think I was trying to give as many clues as possible. In Trafalgar Square is Nelson's Column, at the top of which there is this statue. Yes, it's a bit of a commemoration of the Battle of Trafalgar. And just to tell you a little bit of a story, and I guess there's no apologies for me telling you this history story. I have told you before about my worst two subjects at school, didn't I? You know what my worst two subjects at school were? History and... History and... religious studies. Yeah, and now everyone's really getting worried. So now this pastor is going to give you a history lesson. So sit back, enjoy, and maybe you'll learn something, as I did as I looked into this story. You see, what was happening around about that time was someone else, beginning with N, was starting to march across Europe. Who was this? Napoleon. Okay, Napoleon was starting to take this French army across Europe, as Europe has experienced so many times before, of different people trying to take over other countries. And Napoleon knew that if he could gain control of the stretch of water between France and Britain, that then there was this possibility of being able to launch an invasion and try and take over Britain. So being able to control the water and the seas was very important. And no one, even more than Lord Nelson, knew this. He had a bit of history. It wasn't a very... well, it wasn't one to follow, let me put it that way. If you're not too sure, then go and read some history books or get onto Wikipedia. But Lord Nelson had a bit of a checkered history, and reading it, I think I don't really want to be on his boat. He was fairly successful, not always, but fairly successful. But it seemed as though, as part of that success, he always seemed to lose a lot of men. But nevertheless, it got to 1805, and he was the one that it was decided that he would take the English or British fleet and try and track down the French and the Spanish. You see, the French and the Spanish fleets had joined together. And at the time of the Battle of Trafalgar, I read that the English fleet had 33 ships. It's not as many as I thought. I thought there might be more than that. Of the 33, 27 were battleships. And those battleships between them had 2,142 cannons. Now you're talking about big numbers. Only on just 27 battleships, there were 2,142 cannons. The thing is, the British fleet were outnumbered. There were 41 ships in the French and Spanish fleet, of which there was 18 plus 15, that's 33 battleships. So whereas the English fleet had 27, the French and the Spanish had 33 battleships. And they were even outnumbered on their cannons. The British fleet, was it 2,142? The French and the Spanish had 2,630. About 500 more cannons. And in those day, at that day and age, they realized they were building bigger and bigger battleships. Because the bigger you could build your ships, the bigger and more cannons you could take, the more damage you're going to make, and the more likely you're going to be able to rule the waves. So this was a one-sided, lopsided, in the favor of the French and Spanish battle. But what was happening with the run-up of this was Lord Nelson had been chasing the French and the Spanish fleet. They'd chased them from our waters around Europe right the way across the Atlantic, and for a couple of years Lord Nelson had been looking for the French and the Spanish fleet around the Caribbean, and they weren't quick enough, and the French and the Spanish came back and harboured in Spain, I think it was, in Cadiz, and they were hiding there, although they had more ships. And what they decided, the English fleet decided to do, was to send a small group of ships down around the harbour just to start teasing the French and the Spanish out. And it worked. The whole fleet, the whole French and Spanish fleet, came out to charge down this smaller group of boats and ships. But what they didn't realize was the rest of the fleet were about 50 miles out into sea. And the English boats turned their sails, and the wind was good for them, and they brought the French and the Spanish fleet into this area where the British fleet was. Just as they started to engage in this long-awaited battle, the sea battle, and it's certainly nothing that I would like to be part of or see. I always imagine, you know, big ships, big cannons, you know, it's a bit of a distance. But reading some of the stories, they get so close that their rigging and stuff starts getting caught between the two ships. And they kind of need to get close, because at some point they need to be able to jump from their ship onto the other ship in order to take it over. And hopefully they're going to take it over in one piece. They don't want to blow the ships up completely, because there's a resource. So it was quite a bloody affair, these kind of battles. And slightly outnumbered, Lord Nelson strikes up his plan. As the French and the Spanish fleet started to circle and in a curved arc go round the back of the English fleet, that was exactly what Lord Nelson wanted. And he took half of the English fleet, and Lord, might have been Commander Collingwood, took the other half. And as this line of ships started to come round, the British fleet divided into two lines and attacked the middle of the French and Spanish line. The top line of the British fleet went up north, and the bottom line went down south. That was their tactical plan, and the long and short of it is it worked. But just before they went into battle, Lord Nelson communicated with the rest of the fleet. Bearing in mind they didn't have all the technology like we have now. But he got with these flag system and so on, a message was sent to the whole of the fleet. And this message is what you find at the bottom of Nelson's column. If you go to Trafalgar Square nowadays, it's there. And there is a variation of what was actually said, but as it's written at the bottom of Nelson's column, Lord Nelson sent out this message. England expects that every man do his duty. England expects that every man do his duty. And there's three things out of this story that I'd like to draw from. And I know my time is pressing with our communion service as well, but please bear with me. England expects that every man do his duty. Hold on to that one rallying cry. Because, who did I say? There was someone else, part of the British fleet. Commander Collingwood was taking the other group, second half of the fleet of the ships. And he apparently got together his officers just before they went off. And he made this little rallying cry, and it's all recorded in the books. He says to his officers, "Now, gentlemen, let us do something today that the world may talk of hereafter. Let us do something today that the world may talk of hereafter." Well, Nelson's column is in Trafalgar Square, which is in London, and no surprises, you know, it was a significant battle. And if you don't know the result, the British fleet won. What was the first comment that I want us to remember, that we'll just come to in a moment, look at scripturally? What did Lord Nelson have pulled up in the flag system to send a message to everyone? England expects that every man do his duty. And what did Lord Collingwood, or Colonel Collingwood, Commander Collingwood, say to his officers? Let us do something today that the world may talk of hereafter. As I said, the battle ensued, and although Lord Nelson had been into many battles, and this was a big one that his name is attached to, it was his last battle. You see, he was out on deck, and as I said, the ships are so close together, and not only are there cannons and so on, there are musketeers that are firing their weapons and so on. And from high up in the rigging of the French ship, someone shot at Lord Nelson. And it entered his left shoulder and went through his shoulder and hit his spine and shattered his spine. And as he collapsed to the floor, he was taken down below decks, and the ship's surgeon came to him, and they were looking after him. And it still took a few hours before he actually died. But in those few hours, his plan of action, his plan of attack, was realized. And there, literally on his deathbed, the news was conveyed to Lord Nelson that we have victory, that we have defeated the other fleet. And as he laid there and as he heard these words, and whether he was thinking just a few hours before of his comment that every man do his duty, it's recorded that Lord Nelson, virtually his last words were, "Thank God I have done my duty." Story in history, three comments that are made. What was the first one I want us to reflect on? Lord Nelson said, "England declares that every man do his duty." And Collingwood said, paraphrasing it, "Let's do something today that everyone's going to remember." And what did Lord Nelson say just as he breathed his last? "Thank God I have done my duty." Maybe it's not coincidental that having just read our nominating committee report and bearing in mind that there are a few gaps and vacancies, it's the right day to be able to convey these three points. But I want to turn your attention to our scripture reading. And there in Ecclesiastes chapter 12, as I said, it's unsure of whether this was exactly Solomon that said this or a commentator. I've taken my bookmark out, so I can't get to it quickly enough. That's the whole story. Here now is my final conclusion. Fear God and obey his commands, for this is everyone's duty. Of course, I deliberately picked this translation. I think it's in the King James Version as well. It uses this word duty. And I'm quite captivated by that, of what Lord Nelson said, but many years before what someone wrote here in Ecclesiastes. So what does it mean to do our duty? One commentary that I read, I want to quote this exactly because I can't put it in better words, about these verses in Ecclesiastes. It says, "Man's enjoyment of life as God's gift does not excuse him from obedience or exempt him from judgment." That's the whole story. Here now is my final conclusion. Fear God and obey his commands, for this is everyone's duty. Man's enjoyment of life as God's gift does not excuse him from obedience or exempt him from judgment. You see, it seems to me that in this reference in Ecclesiastes, our duty as a response to God is tied up with our response to what God asks us to do, his commands. But that's in reflection of knowing that there is a final judgment. Man's enjoyment of life as God's gift does not excuse him from obedience or exempt him from judgment. What did Lord Nelson say with the flags? England expects that every man do his duty. I look at this verse And I think to myself, this is the same thing, isn't it? That God expects that every man, woman, and child do their duty. If we say that we're God followers, that's linked to final judgment, an acknowledgement of that, and it's reflected in the way that we participate in response to God's commands. So, to look at those three points, am I doing my duty? Am I doing my duty? What is it that God is asking of me in response to what he has done for me? And what was that Collingwood quote that I gave you? Yeah, I don't mind if you paraphrase it. Do something today that the world will talk about. Now, I have no idea whether the world talks about the Battle of Trafalgar. They probably don't in France and Spain, I would presume. And I doubt if much beyond Britain it really gets talked about. But I'm reflective of Paul. We sang about it, actually. Interesting. Thank you for picking that song. I didn't pick the songs today, but they fit very well. But in Acts chapter 17, we don't have time to go through everything of it. But Acts chapter 17, as you're turning, I'll turn as well. I do want to quickly read you these few lines. I know time is moving on, but it says here, Acts chapter 17, Paul and Silas then travelled through the towns, I won't read those names, and then to Thessalonica, which where there was a Jewish synagogue. As was Paul's custom, he went into the synagogue service, and for three Sabbaths in a row, he used the scriptures to reason with the people. He explained the prophecies and proved that the Messiah must suffer and rise from the dead. He said, "This Jesus I'm telling you about is the Messiah." Some of the Jews who listened were persuaded and joined Paul and Silas, along with many God-fearing Greek men and quite a few prominent women. But some of the Jews were jealous. So they gathered some troublemakers from the marketplace to form a mob and start a riot. They attacked the house of Jason, searching for Paul and Silas, so they could drag them out to the crowd. Not finding them there, they dragged out Jason and some of the other believers instead and took them before the city council. "Paul and Silas have caused trouble all over the world," they shouted. "And now they are here disturbing our city too. And Jason has welcomed them into his home. They are all guilty of treason against Caesar, for they profess allegiance to another king named Jesus." Wow. Paul and Silas have been troublemakers. Well, that was one way of putting it. But they went around, and everywhere that they went, they were turning the world upside down. Just like Collingwood said, let's do something. Let's do something that people will talk about the world over. And I reflect on Paul and Silas in Acts chapter 17 and Collingwood's words. I reflect on Lord Nelson and I think, am I really doing my duty? Everywhere that I go, am I turning people's worlds upside down that they can know and hear about Jesus? And then Lord Nelson on his deathbed, he said something similar to what Paul said. In 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 7. Maybe you know it, but you just don't know the reference. Paul said, I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. And I have remained faithful. Thank God I've done my duty. That's basically what Paul was saying. So as I reflect on this verse in Ecclesiastes, and as I reflect on this event in history, I can't help but wonder in my mind, am I doing the duty that God is calling me to do? And am I making an impact, at least on someone's world? And at the end of time, whenever that will be, will I be able to breathe my last and say, thank God, I've done my duty.